The opinions expressed in the Spirited Sports Podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Spirited Sports. Toldy Kakaletris, Nick DiCicco, Elias Drakos, and many more break down the biggest moments, game-changing plays, and the stories behind the athletes. Whether you live for the thrill of victory, the hustle of the underdog, or just love a great sports conversation, you're in the right place. This is Spirited Sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spirited Sports. How's it going? Very happy to be back in the studio. Nick, Toldy, and Elias with you. It's another episode of Spirited Sports coming your way. Let's start it off here in the MLB, and let's start it off with the World Series as the Blue Jays are one win away from winning the ultimate prize.
Yeah, I mean, Nick, it is unbelievable what this team has done coming into it. I mean, they started off against the New York Yankees in the postseason. First of all, just barely beating them for that top spot in the American League East. They start off against the Yankees, take care of business. They go on to Seattle, a close seven-game series. The big bringer hit. And then you're facing the Dodgers, the Goliath LA Dodgers. And it's been a close series so far. They come back, they win a couple games, and in convincing fashion, too. I mean, they won 6-1, guys, in Game 5. Like, and they're one win away. This is insane to me.
Yeah, this game was decided within three pitches. I mean, it took just three pitches from the LA Dodgers starter, Blake Snell, for the Toronto Blue Jays to take a 2-0 lead in Game 5 of the World Series with back-to-back home runs from Davis Schneider and Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Can we talk about how good Vladdy's looked this postseason?
All right, Nick, let's hear more about your thoughts on Vladdy.
8 home runs, franchise leader in postseason home runs, going above names like Jose Bautista and Joe Carter.
He's two ahead of both because Carter and Bautista, I believe, had 6 each, right? And now Vladdy's up to, is it 8? Elias, your thoughts on the remarkable playoff version this year and now World Series version of Vladdy?
He's been unbelievable, guys. The defense was always there. 23 home runs, 84 RBIs, 172 hits. I mean, Vladdy has been excellent. He's been remarkable, and in the playoffs, he's taken another step, and he is leading this Toronto Blue Jays charge right now, especially with a couple of players that are not 100%.
Yeah.
One thing I want to bring up here, and Nick, I'll pass over to you first. What is going on in this playoffs with whenever Kevin Gausman is on the mound, not talking about the previous game, talking in general, because previous game, it was Yesavage versus Snell. What has been going on this postseason? Every time Gausman gets on the mound, it looks like the Jays' bats just go silent. There's been so many games in this postseason where you've seen Gausman give them a quality start, and then the Jays' bats just aren't going in that game. What's up with that?
Look at the last game against Yamamoto, right? Elite pitcher there.
To say the least.
Exactly. Yamamoto, you can't really fault the Jays for that.
Boy, really pitched the whole game.
Yeah, he's coming off of a complete game the game before. Going into Game 6, he's a starter against Gausman, right? In Game 2, it was, again, Gausman and Yamamoto, right? Yamamoto had the complete game. Yamamoto had a complete game before that as well. 2 straight complete game starts in the postseason. I think that just has to show what kind of pitcher they're going up against, right?
Elias?
Yeah, like, I think I totally agree with what you said, Nick. I think that Yamamoto is a world-class pitcher. I mean, to go 2 consecutive starts in the postseason and pitch complete games, like, that's unheard of. And now he's going in Game 6 against Kevin Gausman. The Jays have a chance to win the World Series in Game 6. And I think they're going to get to Yamamoto just a little bit more than they have the last time. For me, I don't think he pitches a complete game. I think if he did, that would be insane if he did that again. I mean, and I would give him his flowers. I don't see it happening for a third consecutive start. That being said, he's still a very tough pitcher. I just think the Jays, they're going to see him a second time around, and they're going to be able to get a few more hits off of him.
Listen, the Jays have had their moments here in the postseason. Their offense has actually been, for the most part, very good in the playoffs, like especially in the Yankees series. Like they were hit the Yankees right out of that series. But, you know, it just even in game two where it was Gausman and Yamamoto, hats off to Yamamoto. He was excellent. But the Wizard of Gauz was great until the last couple of batters there. But going to Yamamoto here, Nick.
Yeah.
Is this some of the best pitching starting wise you've ever seen in the playoffs? Oh.
For sure. It's, you know, for a pitcher to have really good stats in 5 or 6 innings is good. But when you have 2 back-to-back complete games, that's unheard of. That is really, really good. And he carried that team into those victories.
Elias, tell us a little bit more about your Savage. There was a milestone that he actually got in game 5. Tell us exactly what happened there.
Yeah, I mean, how about Trey Savage? Like, this guy, I don't want to say he came out of nowhere because we had, like, an idea of what kind of a pitcher he would be, but he is exceeding expectations on every level right now. They threw him in September, had a few good starts, and in this postseason, phenomenal. And his last start, the best start I have ever seen. 12 strikeouts, 7 innings. Historic, because no rookie has ever done that in the World Series before. And he gave them a really, really good start and a really good chance to win that ball game. I mean, he gave up 1 home run. That was it. He was lights out. He struck out every single batter in the Dodger lineup at least once.
Yeah.
And this Dodger lineup, we're not talking, this is not a Colorado Rockies type of lineup here. This is the Dodgers. This is Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, etc. A really, really good lineup. And he made them look like whatever, that they weren't that great.
Nick?
Yeah, like it was, you know, going into the postseason, he had a few really good starts. But this is where he shined. Again, record-breaking moments in the World Series for a team that many didn't think would make it to the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, there were fans out there that had the Yankees beating the Jays in that ALDS.
I was one of them.
Tell us why.
Well, okay, look, when going into it, I was like, okay, the Jays, like, they're a good team. They just barely beat them out, right? Top spot, AL East.
Same record, but did the head-to-head, right?
Yeah, tie break. So they played well enough in the regular season, which was great. But I figured, I'm like, you know, you look at the Yankees lineup and you're like, oh, Judge, Stanton, right? Like, you have a lot of those big names in there. And I'm like, I don't know how well they're going to do. But everything clicked at the right time for them, and everything is still clicking at the right time. Like, you look at, right, Springer before he was sort of injured, and Vladdy and Bo, and some of the big names, Kirk. But you're getting production from the bottom of the lineup too, guys. You're getting production from IKF, Jimenez,
yeah,
Straw, Schneider, whoever's in
Barger.
There. Barger's yeah. A big one. God, Clement. Right?
Clement, yeah.
Both of them have been great, Barger and Clement.
These yeah. guys who a few years ago you've never heard of, our heroes and our stars of this game.
Kirk's been fantastic.
That
Kirk's
too. Really yeah.
Mamma mia, he's been great.
I get it. And we said this a few weeks ago, 1-9, they've been clutch in every possible situation. And they have.
And also, if I may add on, Nick, whether it's a productive out or a base hit, right?
Yeah,
sometimes they're
too.
Laying down a sacrifice bunt. Sometimes they're hitting it to the outfield and getting a guy home from third, right? Sometimes yeah. they're just trying to hit it on the ground. Like, productive outs create runs. They're not necessarily doing it in the most traditional way. Yes, they have their home runs, but they're doing it the Blue Jays style of play that we've seen all year long, and that I really shouldn't have doubted them come this postseason, because they are playing really, really well right now.
And one thing to add with this MLB season is it's coming to a close, and we're very close to crowning a champion, whether it's back-to-back champs or third-time World Series champs, first in 32 years. This is the first season in the MLB where the first game and last game of the season are outside the United States. First game was in Japan. The World Series will end in Toronto.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. That's the first time that's happening. I mean, you started off internationally, then you're coming back and you're finishing the series in Canada and in Toronto. I think fans are excited. And, you know, by the time this episode comes out, we will know who won.
Well, look at it this way, right? The G's were phenomenal in the regular season at home. And they've been, you know, great in the playoffs at home too. Against the Yankees, they went 2-0 at home in the ALDS. Against the Mariners, they went, 2-2
They lost their first two games at home, which was a big surprise to everyone.
Oh, huge surprise. And now against the Dodgers, they're what, 1-1 at home. But my point is, the way the format is in the MLB in the best out of seven in the playoffs is 2-3-2, unlike hockey where it's 2-2, 1-1-1. So the Jays have two tries at home to get it done, game six and game seven. Close it out in game six, because game seven, then the series is tied. It's a different feel.
I think they're going to do it in game six. I think they have to do it in game six, because if they don't, I agree.
Is game six Yamamoto?
It is. Yeah. I think they're going to do it totally. I think game six, they're going to do it. And if they don't, here's the issue now. Game seven, the momentum shifts a little. Yes, you're still at home. Yes, you still control, you know, the atmosphere. And
but
it's 3-3.
You've lost at home.
You've lost the edge. You got to go and finish them off in six games, and that's that. And I think they're going to do it. And I'm bad at predictions, but I think they're going to do it.
All right, let's talk about this Dodgers side as well. Really good season for them, regardless of who wins and loses this World Series. Both teams played their hearts out this year. And, you know, the Dodgers kind of rolled through everybody in the postseason up to this point.
I mean, shocking there with the Brewers. The Brewers had a better record in the regular season than the Dodgers and the Jays.
The Brewers had, what, 96, 97?
Yeah, they were phenomenal. And think about it. Not only did Yamamoto have that complete game against the Brewers, the Dodgers only allowed one run in every game. So one run in game one, one in game two, one in game three, one in game four. They swept them in that NLCS. So really, really interesting stuff there too. But yeah, it's been a great series, and we'll see. Let's one last thing here on the Dodgers. Nick, let's talk a little bit of Kershaw here. Talk about the bittersweetness of that last game for him.
Yeah, it was, you know, Kershaw's nearing the end of his career, and he's retiring at the end of the year. And for someone who watches baseball, what a incredible figure in baseball that is Clayton Kershaw. You know, just the magic that he had on the mound and being with the Dodgers throughout his career has been fantastic. And having him come in and pitch in LA in the final game there was incredible.
Elias, talk a little bit more about Kershaw's career. What stands out to you? I mean, what doesn't, right?
Well, I think it's more what doesn't. I think you're right there. But like Kershaw, three-time Cy Young Award winner, clutch appearance out of the bullpen in that 12th inning, you know, back in game three with the 6-5 win over 18 innings for the Dodgers. But Kershaw, I mean, he's one of those pitchers where you think of him and you're like, what a historic career he's had, right? In his prime, you know, 2010 to 2015, he led the National League in ERA five times, in strikeouts three times, and in wins twice. One of the best seasons ever in 2014. He finished 21-3 that year. Wow. With a 1.77 ERA. Like, that's unheard of. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. No doubt about it.
First ballot? I'm going to say yeah.
Yeah. Same here. I think so.
Well, I mean, it's just incredible, right? The lefty has spent his entire MLB career with the Dodgers since debuting there in 2008. And
I think that has something to say too. Like, he's played his entire career in LA with the Dodgers. Not a lot of MLB players get to play their entire career with one team.
Yeah, you know, it's incredible too. He's won three Cy Young Awards, one NL MVP award, two World Series championships in 2020 and 2024, and 11 All-Star selections. He's also noted for his remarkable statistical achievements, including a career ERA of 2.54 and being the only pitcher with at least 200 wins and fewer than 100 losses. Now, taking it from the diamond to the ice, let's talk some NHL here. Elias, it's the latest out of Dallas.
Well, the latest out of Dallas, Dallas Stars signed defenseman Thomas Harley to an 8-year extension. The extension will begin next season and run through the 2033-2034 season for, okay, I have an exact number here, $84.696 million, AAV of 10.587. Yes, I did those calculations in my head. No, I didn't. I'm kidding.
A mathematician
that,
action over
that
there.
That would have been pretty good, though, if I did. Hurley is in his third full season with Dallas. 1 goal and 7 assists in the team's first 10 games, and he's ranked 7th among NHL defensemen in scoring. Set career highlights last season was 16 goals and 34 assists with 50 points overall, and he finished 15th in scoring among NHL defensemen.
Nick, your thoughts on Hurley?
He's fantastic. He's the future of that Dallas Stars team. I see him as the next Miro Heiskanen, like the next star defenseman in Dallas.
What makes you buy into him that much?
Just the skill, you know, being a young player and having that skill is really, really promising to me. I'm excited to see what he does in the next 8 years in Dallas.
Yeah, here's where I'm at with that. Thomas Harley's demonstrating the potential to be in the same elite tier as Miro Heiskanen, as you said, Nick. But it's not yet a certainty that he will be as good. Heiskanen has been a top-tier defenseman for longer and has a more established track record, while Harley has emerged more recently. Both are crucial to the Dallas Stars' success and represent different but complementary skill sets. Is the duo of Thomas Harley and Miro Heiskanen top 10 defensive duo in the NHL?
Well, Makar and Taves, right? Those two have to be really up there. Like Hudson and Dobson they look really, really good this season. So we'll see where that goes.
So Makar and Taves, Hudson and Dobson, that's two.
Hudson and Dobson, not yet, but I see them up there.
You see
very,
it in
very
them.
Soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's your honorable mention. Yeah. Okay, who else?
But for me, I do put them in the top 10. I don't know where, but I put them in the top 10. Dallas is a strong defensive team. They have a lot of speed, and they're really good on the breakout, I find. Especially last season, I found their breakouts were really, really good with Robertson, with Wyatt Johnston, and Stankoven last year. Before he was traded to Carolina. Stankoven's going to do really well with Carolina.
So I'm going to throw out defensive duos, and I want to hear the two of you. Yes or no? Okay, here we go. Let's
in the top 10?
Yeah, here we go.
Okay.
So Makar and Taves, we already said. Dobson and Hudson, we said. Here's Heiskanen and Harley, we said. Fox and Lindgren of the New York Rangers.
Yeah, I'd probably put them around 5.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Morrissey and DeMello of the Jets.
Like either 6 or 4.
Quinn Hughes and Hronik of the Canucks.
Yeah, Hughes. I'd put them in the top 10.
Yeah, I'd put two.
Dahlin and Byram of the Sabres.
Yeah, I don't think they'd make my top 10. But...
No, just outside looking in.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, maybe just outside.
See, like 11 or 12.
Yeah,
like they just
right outside.
Because there's so many good defensive pairings.
There is. It's hard to. It's really hard to.
Yeah. Zach, we'll do Moritz Seider and Simon Edvinson of the Detroit Red Wings.
I like Seider. The other one, I'd give him
like the 11th spot. Like just
yeah, like
just
close.
Outside.
Yeah.
Cam Fowler and Colton Pareko of the St. Louis Blues.
No, not in the top 10 for me.
No? Let's see.
It's so tough to choose sometimes.
It is. It is.
Gustav Forsling and Aaron Ekblad of the Florida Panthers.
Oh, yeah.
I think definitely. Yeah.
Matthias Ekholm and Evan Bouchard of the Edmonton Oilers.
Yep.
The Bouch Bomb. Let's see. The last few we have here is, let me throw out a different one. Instead of Lindgren and Fox, how about Gavrikov and Fox? Step up or step down from what I listed before? I think step up.
I think so, too.
Say again?
So instead of Lindgren and Adam Fox, now we're doing Vladislav Gavrikov, who did their big acquisition from the Kings, and Fox.
Yeah, it's a step up.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then let's see. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of... it's so funny when we do these segments. We did it with Herbert a couple weeks ago. We did it... Who else did we do? And with Wolf. Well, we...
Let's talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs and John Tavares. A big milestone for the former captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. 500 career goals for John Tavares, spanning across his time with the New York Islanders and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think that has, you know, a lot to show of John Tavares' dedication to the game. And he's the 49th player in NHL history to achieve the feat of 500 career goals. For me, you know, this is just one big milestone, and just kind of keep the good feelings rolling here for John Tavares. he's played decent this season, and let that be a big momentum booster for him and the rest of the team.
How do you feel about the extension that they signed him to before the season starts now that you're seeing, you know, the production from him?
I like it. It's a good contract. And again, just use this milestone as a momentum booster for yourself and for the team.
Elias, your thoughts on Johnny T?
Yeah, I think that, you know, he's had a pretty good start to the year. A 500th career goal is definitely no small feat, and I think it should be celebrated. But I think that Johnny T is going to have to play a big part for the Leafs this season, because they've made a few moves in the offseason. And I think that Tavares is going to have to just continue to play the way he's playing and be that, you know, leader on the team and that guy who's going to go out and score some goals, put some assists on the board, help this team win.
Now, I'm just going to put this out here. John Tavares is not a lock to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Where are we at with that statement? Once again, John Tavares is not a lock to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I agree. I think usually nobody's ever a lock, usually, for first ballot Hall of Fame, right?
Unless you're like Wayne Gretzky or
like
Claude Lemieux.
Ever to play. Bobby Orr. Don't get me wrong, Tavares is a great player, but you have to be the elite of the elite.
Last thought here on hockey, Elias, I know you want to talk about it.
How about those Montreal Canadiens? 8-3 to start the year. I mean, I didn't see this coming, to be like, I knew they were going to be a better team and an improving team, but they've looked pretty good so far. I mean, 8-3, not too shabby. First in the Atlantic.
Top of the Atlantic, above teams like Toronto, above teams like Florida, above teams like Tampa.
And then obviously look at this year, obviously, you know, not that it made up for it, because Savard was that great guy in the locker room, steady presence on the ice.
He was more that veteran presence.
Yeah, for sure. But bringing in Dobson,
yeah,
to now great. Have the, even though to have that 1-2 punch with Hudson and Dobson is incredible.
It's been unbelievable, totally, to see what Bolduc has done. But 22-year-old, and it's not Trey Savage, 22-year-old. It's Zachary Bolduc. Bolduc, I mean, look, 4 goals, 2 assists in 11 games to start the year. I know it's like, they're not like eye-popping numbers to start, but the presence he's had with this team so far, he's looked really good on the ice for this team. And I think he's been a great addition to the Habs.
The Canadians wanted Bolduc for offensive depth. And the Blues acquired Logan Mailloux for their need of a young defenseman. Both teams got what they needed. I just think the Habs got a better player who's been performing better at this point in time. Does Mailloux have the potential? Yes. Does he have the upside? Probably. Right now, is Bolduc the better player? Even though Bolduc's an offensive player and Mailloux's a defenseman? Without a doubt. But Nick, legendary NBA coach, and Greg Popovich, and a great celebration recently, which happened in San Antonio. What exactly happened there?
Yes. So in San Antonio, for the home opener this season, to honor and celebrate and commemorate his great achievements as the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs, the Spurs raised a banner, simple white banner with Pop on it. And the number 1,390, that is his NBA record coaching victories. And it's quite sad to see his coaching, Greg Popovich's coaching career come to an end like this after some health issues.
Yeah, for sure. Everyone here at Spirited Sports continues to wish better health moving forward for Popovich. But continuing on the you know, incredible coaching career of Popovich.
Yeah, NBA record-breaking, an incredible coach.
And let's talk wins. How many wins there, Nick?
1,390.
And titles?
5. That was a great episode of Spirited Sports.
Absolutely.
Really good stuff here, guys.
Great to be together again. You know, we had the couple weeks there with reading week and then, you know, midterms, but it's great to be here together. But we're back here all together. Had a lot of fun, yeah. And just great camaraderie here.
I totally agree.
You got it. Couldn't have said it better myself there. Totally. Good job.
Thank you.
Alrighty, that will do it for the end of this episode of Spirited Sports. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.